I'm just hold on a second.
Hold on a motherfucking second.
Okay, I'm gonna be.
Hey, Mo, I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. I gotta open this door. We can just leave it rolling. Hold on.
AFI. Backstage Stories.
All right. Hi, Mo. I'm actually. It's funny, I'm in your town, but we're separated and we're being responsible with our social distancing.
Of course we are. It's super weird. It's even more weird than the last episode because you are in my hometown where I grew up. We're like 400 meters apart, but are FaceTiming. Rona made us do it.
Damn, Rona. You know, I think if we all owned a bunch of tigers, there wouldn't even be a coronavirus. But I'm almost, you know, dude, like there's this weird small part of me. It sounds so fucked up because I feel so bad for the people that are deeply affected by this virus. But there's a really small part, honest part of me that's a little bit thankful for this time, this like slowed down version of my life because I was able to obsess over the Tiger King. I love this fucking show.
I still haven't seen that much. Shame on me.
Did you watch it at all, like the first episode or anything?
I've seen like the first 5 minutes, and then I fell asleep.
I'm so disappointed. It's so good.
Sorry.
It's so good.
But I can make it up. I got a funny story to tell about the phrase "Rona made me do it" because I uploaded a little home recording of mine on Instagram and Facebook. And wrote the caption, "Don't let Rona kill your groove."
Nice, nice.
And then a friend of my dad, who's Irish, and her name is Rona, with an H after the R, and she was kind of like, "What the fuck? I'm not killing anyone's groove."
She's like, I was born in the age of the groove. I keep the groove. Ask my husband. He's very groovy.
And I was once again very amused by Irish names.
You know what we should do? We should, at the end of this episode, we should put like a 20-second clip of your home demo and like a 20-second clip of my home demo, and then let the listeners either roast us or judge us, or you know, we can see like we can, it can be like a voting scale.
We can have a little race here.
Yeah, yeah. They could but they could leave, like we'll do a post and then they can comment their favorite demo on the post.
Yeah.
I like that.
But do you think the phrase "Rona made me do it" is maybe a thing since ages? Because her husband says it like, "I have to make dishes. Rona made me do it."
It's like, "Hey, Mike, why are you out here, you know, digging up all these roots from the flower bed all by yourself? And I mean, don't you have anyone to help you?" "Ah, I didn't want to do it on the day of my son's wedding, but Rona made me do it." Fucking Rona!
There is so much potential in this.
Rona made me do it, man. Imagine like the clips of crime shows. You see a guy in handcuffs and like slammed against the cop car, and the police officer's like, "Why'd you do it, man? Why'd you kill all those innocent people?" And then they zoom in really close on the guy, and as like a single tear comes down, he goes, "Rona made me do it."
We should feature a girl named Rona on this podcast.
We should get
and
Rona,
roast her for, dude, all the stuff that's happening.
We should put her on the call literally just to make fun of her and give her shit. Every time she coughs, like, "Fucking Rona, cover your mouth." Jesus Christ. We're in a pandemic.
There's potential in this, but anyhow, we're both on a kind of vacation.
Yeah, actually.
In my hometown and in your wife's hometown, which seems to be the same.
Yeah, it's kind of the same.
and that's also somehow the topic of today's episode, I guess.
That's right.
Vacation,
yeah.
Buddy.
Yeah, you know, because I thought about this earlier, how during this time right now, actually, I'm supposed to be on a vacation with my brother and his husband and Ify, and we're supposed to be in France together. Actually, we had booked their flights to Germany. We had booked the Airbnb, And I've never, ever been to Paris before, and I really wanted to check it out. And we had this whole trip planned, man. So actually, we would have been on vacation right now, and I just thought, why don't we do an episode where we talk about our favorite vacations or vacations that we would have wanted to go on? I think that could be kind of nice.
I guess so. And I've also not been to Paris yet, but it must be very nice.
Dude, I think it's crazier for me when people grow up in a city in Europe, but they haven't seen like the five or ten, whatever major Central European cities. Then for me, I'm always like, but how? It's right there. But then if someone were to ask me if I've ever been to, you know, Las Vegas or Chicago or Salt Lake City or something, I haven't been. So it could be the same argument, I guess.
Yeah. I guess I would not compare Paris to Salt Lake City, but yeah, it's
well, have you been? Basically. Have you been? No, but I mean, every year now I go on this, I usually go on at least a 1 week or like a 2 week vacation with Ify's family. And it's always around August in Germany, they always take the month off. Nobody's working. It's a big holiday time and everyone's traveling. And those have been some of my absolute favorite holidays of all time, like going to certain places. I have been to France before with them, and that was so beautiful and like kind of this awakening experience in the ocean, and like the food is so good. We go to Italy a lot with them and stuff, and I'm very thankful. And I thought about one time when my parents visited us here, Ify wanted, they asked, they were like, can we go see this castle, the Neuschwanstein castle? And for those who don't know, like whenever you watch a Disney movie and you see this opening logo with the music and this big castle, this castle is heavily based on a real castle in Bavaria. And actually you can Google it, and it really looks just like the same castle. It's this huge, beautiful, magnificent, insane castle. And it was built by King Ludwig II?
Second.
Yeah. This guy's super interesting. He had like a lot of unexpected interests and curiosities, and his so we visited this castle with them, and it's unbelievable. Like one room is just, have you been there before, Mo?
I've been there like 10 times.
Really? Okay,
it's
cool.
Just a few kilometers from here. It's like
not far,
right around the corner.
Yeah, it's not far, but it's this unbelievable place. I mean, especially for someone who's not, being from America, I'm really not used to castles. You know, and coming here on these family vacations, we were always seeing castles all over France and seeing small castles and stuff all over Germany. And you get kind of used to it. But then when you see this fucking place, you're like, oh, that's a castle. That's a castle, man. It's unbelievable. And then you go inside and, you know, you're in this like humongous line and you get shuffled through pretty quickly. But in general, you're just overwhelmed, right? You have this one room that's just a cave, like a dripping cave. And there's one room that was just dedicated to, what was the composer he was obsessed with? Was it, he had one, oh man, I bet there's one German listener right now who's like screaming it at the fucking radio.
You know, Wagner?
Wagner, that's right, Wagner. And he had like a whole room that was just waiting, like, or just prepared for orchestras or singers to perform Wagner. It was so unbelievable. But so we took my parents through this huge castle, and it was, I don't know, 2 hours of an adventure, the whole thing. And at the very end, we're in the gift shop, and my dad's standing there looking at all the trinkets and the keychains and the magnets and stuff. My brother gets like a few things to take home. And then then Ify walks up to him and she's like, so what did you think? Did you have a nice time, you know? And when I was a kid, my parents took me, we didn't go on a lot of family vacations, but when I was a kid, my parents did take me to this place. And you'll have to forgive me if I'm not totally right. We can fact check it later, but I think it's in North Carolina. And I think it's called the Biltmore Estate. And it is another kind of like huge explorable museum-esque mansion with like 100 rooms or something. But obviously it's not this enormous castle, you know? And we had just explored this stuff in my and Ify asks my dad, you know, what do you think? And he was like, well, I mean, it's nice, but, you know, the Biltmore Estate in North Carolina has a bowling alley. And he was...
If you would have told me before, imagine the most American scenario, the most American outturn of this situation. It would have been either he missed a burger shop or a bowling alley.
Oh man, it just killed us. You know, we had just spent so much time and effort making this a nice trip to this fucking castle. We stood in the rain to get in. It was this whole adventure. And at the end, he's like, well, there's no bowling alley inside. So, and then he was like, you guys should come to North Carolina and see the Biltmore Estate. So wild, man. So wild.
Super funny. But that's a pretty interesting point because I guess you have a pretty different relationship to medieval stuff and the Middle Age.
Yeah.
When you're a European versus being an American.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, when you were a kid, did your parents take you to see all these historical places, like to all these castles and stuff?
Of course.
Is it something that you have to do? Like, do you do it with your school?
Obviously, and because it's also in it's still Allgäu, Füssen, where the Schwanstein Castle is still Allgäu. So when you're at school, you go there at least one time. When you have exchange programs, like I was part of an exchange program with a school from southern France, you also bring your guests there and stuff. So obviously you go there, yeah. And also on vacations with my family, we've been a lot of times to South Tyrol, the Italian part of Tyrol, which is hugely affected by Corona, or was, or is, I don't know the current situation. And where, fun fact, my family has its origins, and there are still a lot of old castles. And we've been to one that was super impressive for 6 to 9 year old me, because it owns the world's biggest medieval weapon arsenal.
What?
Yeah. And then you're standing like there like a 7 year old. Yeah, Dad, get me that sword.
Oh my god. Wait, so like what kind of weapons do they have there? How many weapons do they have there?
I would have to Google that, but it's a castle like Neuschwanstein, but more practical, more basic. So it's not that beautifully designed or that artsy. Just that,
dude.
It's more a farty castle than an artsy castle.
Neuschwanstein is just a castle where he was like, "What kind of jungle or mountain would I like to masturbate inside of today?" You know, every yeah. room is just an absolutely insane world that you enter. So yeah. I imagine other castles are way more normal.
Yeah. And there is this they also have an exhibition where you can see the ancient living rooms and stuff and everything very well restorated.
That's
and
cool.
Underneath there have their hostels and stuff like that, and their animals, and a huge hall where there is the weapon exhibition. And it's humongously big, and you only get to see a third of the weapons they have, I guess.
It's okay. In Coolburg. So they have more in the back, kind of like toilet paper at the Walgreens. There's always more in the back.
And everything you could imagine anyone could ever have used to damage someone else. It's super weird, and excuse me, but I don't know most of the names for the weapons in English, but
like, no, it's okay.
Everything you could imagine that is sharp, that is somehow could be threatening.
So it's just like a huge assortment of like axes and blades and knives and hatchets and I don't know. Did they have like, was there any like crazy torture machinery? Like when they would stretch people out and stuff? You know those big like slanted wooden boards with like the straps with like the crank?
Stuff like that. But torture is another thing because I saw, I've made a road trip through Italy with my girlfriend this summer. And we've seen in every second city we passed, and also, you know, those ancient Italian cities in Tuscany and stuff, very beautiful. And every second city we've been through, they've got a Museo della Tortura.
A museum of torture.
A museum of torture.
All right. I'm going to settle in for this one. I want you to tell me about the first one you went into. I'm going to crack this beer. I want to hear all about this.
It's we've not been to it because we thought about it once to go in there, but there was a humongous people were lining up for like 200 meters, and then we were like, oh no, and it's also very expensive, and maybe they got like three torture machines inside of it.
Yeah.
But then I saw a booklet they handed out there, and it's crazy.
Really?
It's super crazy. What'd
you see?
What like those, dude, it's super hard for me in English. I don't know the names, but the kind of body shaped cages.
Yeah.
With blades on both sides and stuff.
Oh shit. So you had to stay in a very uncomfortable position. Otherwise, if you move, you got stabbed by these little blades that would come out of all the sides.
And also a variation where you are fixed at a certain position, and it moves more and more towards you.
Oh my god!
Like every 2 centimeters apart, there are blades which will eventually go through you.
Oh my god!
But you know what? What's the worst variation of torture in my mind? It also been featured on Game of Thrones.
What was that?
Do you remember the scene where they take off the guy's shirt and get a big cup on his belly with the red inside of it, and then they heaten up on the back of the cup.
So wait, explain it again. I don't remember this.
So they take off the shirt of the guy they want to torture.
Right. So he's there shirtless.
Yeah, and they take a big. Like a big cup with a rat inside of it, put it on his belly, and then start to heat the back of the cup.
Oh.
So the rat starts fleeing and starts digging.
Oh, right. Oh, shit. Oh, God, that's so fucked up.
Wah!
That's a whole different level of disturbing, man.
Yeah.
Whenever I think about Game of Thrones torture, like, I remember the most memorable scene for me, and I mean, people, if you haven't watched it by now, then I don't know, pause it and go watch 8 years of TV. But there's this scene with Theon Greyjoy. I think it's like it's early on, it's like season 3 or 4, whenever he's just, you know, when he's just being beaten and tormented for like an entire season, and then he comes down the other side, he's like all castrated and like whatever. But it's when he's being held by, oh fuck, what's his name? He was like, okay, you know, Sansa was with Joffrey. And then after Joffrey was this other dude. And god damn it, if I don't really hate myself for forgetting this guy's name right now. But he was this evil, evil, evil motherfucker with the dogs. He got attacked by the dogs.
You mean Ramsay? Ramsay Bolton?
Ramsay Bolton. Yes, dude. Okay, so when Ramsay was torturing Theon for like, I don't know, an entire season, there's this one episode in particular when Theon's all like, he's like strung up and he's like skinny and he's just being beaten and stabbed and stuff. And then Ramsay acts for like a whole scene that he's going to give him mercy. So he lets his arms down. He sets him at a table. He clothes him. He gives him food. And you're like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And then and then Ramsay lets these women come in. I think it's like two like gorgeous Game of Thrones women. and they get naked and they're rubbing all over him, and he's scared, but he's starting to like open up and relax because he was such a like a hedonist and he was so into sex, like sexualizing everything. And then they get him like really excited and aroused, and then as soon as he would like be ready to do something sexually, they cut it off.
Where the camera switches to Ramsay eating a sausage.
Yes.
You mean that scene?
Yes.
Dude, funny story. I was literally, I was watching this episode with my mom. She was in the living room and I was just coming over from the kitchen, have not eaten anything before that evening, with a with the wiener sausage in my head, and then this scene comes on.
Fuck!
Oh, and I was like, okay, I'ma bring this back to the fridge.
You put it back in and you pray.
I'm so sorry, I took it. I didn't mean to take it. Please give Theon his penis back.
Jesus.
But it's funny how we got stuck on the topic of torture instead of vacation.
Yeah, man, where's your German brain going?
But vacation could also be torture. Have you ever had a very horrible vacation?
Well, I can't say that I've ever had like a terrible, like a really terrible vacation, because there's always a few moments of every vacation where you find like peace for yourself. And I think that's maybe the most important thing, or like with your partner. My parents actually didn't take so many vacations when I was a kid. I remember this fucking Biltmore Estate thing with the bowling alley. And we, let's see, we would travel up to see, like our vacation was kind of like going to Kentucky to stay with my dad's sister's family, because they had a nice house there and they had like this cabin near Kentucky Lake. And that's where we would stay, kind of separated from them a little bit. And it was really cozy. It was always fun. I was really close with my cousin Tyler. And we would just like our vacation was kind of like going to hang out with them. My dad would go fishing with my Uncle Kenny, and my mom would hang out with my Aunt Julie and my brother and Trisha, which was the sister. They were the same age, so they would always go out and, like, you know, do their own thing, get dinners and go partying, whatever. And then me and Tyler were kids, so I do remember one story. I just thought of it yesterday, actually, which is a crazy coincidence, because Efi and I looked at some house here in the mountains where the backyard had like a small porch area, but then there was no field or something, no flat space. It just went down, like straight down to a river. And I told her, oh, that reminds me of my Uncle Kenny's house, because the back of the house, there was just like this long, you know, long downhill into the lake. It wasn't really much of like a yard. It was all like kind of a hill. And I thought about this one story where me and my cousin one time, like, they got a golf cart. And for those who have never driven one, they're very bottom heavy, but they flip very easily. And at the time, I think I was like, I don't know, 14 or younger. And I was a super fat kid. And my cousin Tyler was really skinny, like a really small, like really pencil thin kid. So of course we get in the golf cart and it's already leaning heavily on my side. And then we start driving down the hill together. And I think I was driving, and I'm just speeding down this hill, and I'm getting scared and he's getting scared, but it's super fun. And then I turn it really hard with the brakes and I'm slamming it. And then the whole thing flips over on the side and we just go rolling out of it. And I'll never forget hearing my Uncle Kenny in the background just screaming like, "What the hell?" He was so, he was so freaked out. But a lot of vacations were like that. Just me and Tyler hanging out. We would obsess over music, or I don't know, go on these little adventures in the woods, and then we would all be back together for dinner or something. Yeah. What about you? You must have had a lot of family vacations, because I think Europeans really appreciate that August time. A lot of people take vacations there.
Yeah, especially you got to know August is the school's summer holidays.
Right, the whole month, yeah.
All of the families time their vacations after that. Especially since my mom is a teacher.
Right, I
forget
that.
And we would not every year, but many years we would go on vacation two times a year. once in, there's also those little school holidays around June.
Yeah.
They're called Pfingstferien,
right.
2 weeks. And in those, we would go to a camping site in Italy, but just my mom and us kids. My mm-hmm. dad would have to work. And one vacation with the whole family in summer, with my dad. And yeah, we went on vacation often. And the main reason is since my family could afford it, my mom was searching for any possibility when they've got free time, my parents, to go on vacation and go to other places.
Yeah.
Because my dad is a person who could never let go of his work if he's still here in the house, because his business is in the same house. And even if he has a free weekend, and some client comes around and he's getting back into his normal flow and back to work.
Oh yeah.
So he can only relax if he's not here, and that's why my mom is always seeking for possibilities to go on vacation. And yeah, there were quite many, but to get back to the point that I've never been to Paris, most of the time it would not be city trips, because my mom was always like, oh no, I don't want to do a city trip with all those with all those little kids.
I thought you were gonna say, I don't want to go on the city trips with all those Americans.
No, so it would mostly be something at the seaside, something at a nice river, mountains, whatever. But
did you ever have those, like, because in America there's always this experience of there's in the movies or something, there's always the story of like the kid who's like, you know, just past puberty, maybe like 13 or 14, and then he goes on a trip with his family to some new town. He's going to be there for the whole month. And you know, runs into a girl, or has like a goes to a party, meets a friend, whatever, has like a little like a weekend adventure with a group of people, and like ends up like, I don't know, either doing something sexual with a girl or like feeling like getting involved somehow. Like, did you have experiences like this where you'd go on vacation and like actually blend in with the people from the other town?
Yeah, but in a weird way, because a thing that, in my opinion, I hate is that Germans go on vacation everywhere, all of them. You can't go anywhere and don't meet any fellow Germans.
That's so
and
true.
Most of the time, they're just embarrassing dickheads.
That's so true. I mean, I didn't notice how many Germans were everywhere until I started taking vacations with Germans. And there's other Germans, everywhere. We went to Spain, we went to Italy, we went to France.
Yeah,
fucking everywhere.
And you could go anywhere, and you would recognize a German tourist from 500 meters apart.
Please tell me what, from your perspective, like, because I can always spot a British tourist. So for you, what's the German tourist?
The German tourist, first of all, clothes. You know, there's this cliche of German tourists wearing sandals and white tennis socks.
Yeah.
That's a cliche, but you still see it often.
You see it.
But all in all, clothes and setup, they do not dress how they would in their everyday life, even if they have free time.
They don't dress casually.
They dress up in I don't know. Do you know the brand Jack Wolfskin?
Yeah.
That's a huge thing. They would dress up in any sort of active wear and weird
so much active wear,
polo
right?
shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
And the worst thing are the, you know, those pants where you can zip off half of the pants at yes. head of the knees.
Yes, yes.
And have a huge ass backpack with them, with everything they would never ever need on vacation, but they are equipped.
They're so prepared. That's the thing. They're so prepared. They're always so prepared. It's crazy.
Yeah.
American they're tourists, prepared. You can tell, but you can tell where they are because they're so loud. You just hear them in the next town.
Americans are loud, huge cameras,
yeah,
humongous cameras.
Yeah, dude.
And also, yeah, clothing, I guess. But yeah,
the Americans sometimes, like, if they're from the West Coast, or if they're from like the Portland, even so far east as like Austin, because Austin's like closing in on the other half of the country. But from that side over, all those people, especially in California, are so used to all the different like varieties of terrain that sometimes you can't tell when they come to Europe if they're American from how they dress, because sometimes they're all like, they're decked out in Patagonia, Jack Wolfskin. Some of them are even like in on the local country's, you know, favorite sport, you know, mountain wear, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see them from a distance and think, oh, maybe. But then as soon as they open their mouth, it's like, oh, hey, man, how you doing, bro? Hey, I have this map all set out, and I'm just thinking about, like, heading over to that fucking sweet-ass river, like, maybe, like, dipping my toes in, bro. But I think, oh, yeah, bro, sounds sweet, bro. Yeah, bro, let's do it, bro. And then you just know. It's just over.
Yeah. And it's also super funny for me going on vacation as a guy who's grown up in a town where there are huge masses of tourists every year, winter and summer, for hiking, for skiing, and whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's also I don't know, a big fear of mine when I go on vacation, because I always see here, okay, I hate most of those tourists, and I get this complex because I always think, okay, I don't want to be like them when I am on vacation somewhere else.
Can you explain something to me, like in this town? Because I've been here enough times now to see these tourists that you're talking about, and to see them all year round in all their different delightful outfits and personalities and whatever. But there's this one type of, and I think it's usually German in this town that I see, and it's when they have two totally healthy and functioning legs, and they don't even seem that old. And yet, as they walk down the flat streets of the downtown area, they use these walking sticks, like these hiking sticks. What is that? Why is that? I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't know. It's mostly, it's just bullshit. I get the point of when you're doing hiking tours within the mountains that it could support you walking downwards, but in flat area, I never got it. There used to be a hype about the sports. It's called Nordic walking, where you...
Of course, there's a sport called Nordic walking.
Yeah, where it's about to find the balance between walking and using your arms to it, like on a cross trainer in gym.
Okay.
But it's, for me, it's freaking bullshit. Just don't do it.
I mean, in the grass or up the hill or down the hill, okay, if I see that, I wouldn't actually think too much about it because, you know, whatever. But on the flat pavement in front of a bank, you know, it's like, why?
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, but it seems to be a thing. But to get back to your point of being a teenager and going on vacation and meeting other people, that's why I got to the German tourists everywhere, because you got to see in Europe, so many countries, so you obviously most of the time got a language barrier. And when you're 13 years old, your English boy is not that good.
Sure, and
you have not learned yet any other languages on a level that you could communicate with the locals. And so the people you end up connecting with are other Germans, and most of the time, in my experience, camping sites in Italy, they're either people I did not want to hang out with, or it was just I don't know. You've met those people two or three times. Used to hang out maybe two nights, and that's it. And then they would ride back home, and you'll stay with your family for another week. But nothing ever like the cliche teenage story, falling in love somewhere. I only have one story where I got super shit-faced, and some guy...
Super shit-faced. Let's hear
it. And some guy, I was, I guess, 14 or 15, had the idea to smoke a shisha pipe.
Okay.
Is it the correct term in English as well? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you say shisha pipe or like a hookah.
Yeah, and but to fill the little pot with dope, and instead of water, using vodka.
What? What? Are they murderers? How the fuck is anyone supposed to do that? Oh my god, is that normal? Is that like a common thing?
Absolutely fucking not. That's what I've learned through this.
Oh my god. What happened? Did you pass out?
Immediately.
My god. Immediately. It sounds awful. It sounds so bad.
It's super bad, but I was like a 14 or 15 year old hanging out with these older kids.
14 or 15 years old smoking a clump of dope with water as vodka? Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, and I was like super happy to be hanging out with those older guys, and I obviously found them super cool and was like, okay, you're doing this, so obviously, I'm in.
Sure, yeah, peer pressure. You're like, I'm one of the cool guys. I can jump in, bro. Like, yeah. I'm hanging out. Let's do it.
Dude.
So what happened? Yeah. So you did it, and then what happened?
Passed out immediately. And then as far as I know, I must have been sleeping there for an hour or two, and then getting home late and getting going straight to bed.
Fuck. Did they ask any questions?
I can't remember anything, but as far as I can remember, I found some weird way of explanation, like why I was not feeling good or something and was going straight to bed.
Oh, I had some bad sushi. That's something I think about sometimes too. Like, okay, when I was, I don't know, 17-ish, you know, I was... I know I told these stories a couple of weeks ago about getting arrested and stuff, and like I was experimenting with drugs and I was experimenting with alcohol and I was smoking cigarettes and stuff. And I think that's just the phase you go through around that time. But I didn't really even like alcohol that much until I was around like 19. I wasn't even drinking beer that much at all. Okay. But in Germany, it's so common. It's like the normal thing that at 16, you're already drinking beer and wine, right? But you don't get schnapps, is that right?
Yeah, you get hard alcohol by the age of 18.
18. Okay, so still beer before and wine.
And beer and wine, and I think anything that has below 10% of alcohol, you can buy at the age of 16. And I think 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you could also buy cigarettes at the age of 16.
Holy shit. Wow. Okay. Because I mean, like, I think maybe, I don't know, because the issue in America is that when, you know, let's say I was in a small conservative Christian town and I was like 17 and legally I wasn't able to buy alcohol yet. So maybe that's why it was easier for me to fall into a pattern that was surrounding, you know, weed and, you know, narcotics and, you know, doing more unsavory, unhealthy drugs because that's all I could, you know, and smoking a lot of cigarettes because I didn't have the access to like starting with beer or something. So I'm in this split mind sometimes when I think about when we have kids here in Germany, I think about like, well, what if, you know, what about when this kid is like 16 or even 15? Because if 16 is the age you're allowed to, everyone knows that at 15 you're already trying it. So it's like, how am I supposed to mentally deal with a 15-year-old child? I mean, like in my head, that's like a child, you know, like I have this day job at this school, and I see kids until they're like 17 or 18 all the way through. So it's like, I still see them as like kids, you know? And then you imagine them coming home drunk or like, you know, I'm going to have to really, really get out of my, you know, I don't, it's definitely a very unprogressive mindset because it's American, you know, and Americans are so fucking, I don't know, the culture is so high strung about sexuality and alcoholism and drug and stuff still, you know, and it's not good, I think.
Yeah, it's a super weird thing. And yeah, it's by the age of 16, I mean, I had my first really, really bad drunk story where I fell off my bike riding home and fell asleep in the middle of Oberstdorf on the street until a taxi driver would wake me up. It's also like when you go to a bar and you're 14 years old and it happens on the countryside, the bartender knows your dad or something, and you're 14 years old and he's like, okay, you can drink two beer. That's
it. Oh my God, man.
And he has still some kind of responsibility because he says, okay, two beers, that's it. And then you get out of my bar, but still.
Jesus. That's wild to me, man. Like, Americans listening to this are going to go like, Jesus Christ, 14, you know, 14. And I mean, I talked to so many people in this country, you know, whether they're from here or not. And, you know, regardless of when they tried alcohol or, you know, like regardless of that, their first sexual encounters are always like years earlier than I would have tried or earlier than I did or earlier than I would think is like normal. I mean, some kids here are like, yeah, I got my first blowjob when I was 14. Or like, yeah, we had sex when I was like 15 in her parents' basement. And in my head, I'm like, 15, I was like eating pizza for two, playing video games. I was playing like Super Mario Sunshine and jerking off like crazy. But I never thought about actually getting that and that being normal. Like if the parents saw someone leave the next morning, they'd be like, well, I hope they use protection. You know, in America, it'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Get out of my house, you know? She's a kid, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy, but the whole thing about alcohol is weird, and that's also why there are huge protests about it, because alcohol is a socially accepted thing, and it's you also grow up with it in a small village like here, and I don't know if you get into this like this.
There's such a culture here for it.
Yeah, and you know all those, everything is society based, those little societies, like the marching band is an own society, etc. And as a kid, you grow up with as part of one of these groups, and you're brought to drinking by them.
Right.
At the age of 12 or 13 or something. And that's no big deal. But on the other hand, regarding any other kind of drug, Germany is super strict.
Are they really strict still with weed still? Sorry, you go first.
Bavaria is ridiculously strict about weed. It's super crazy. And
what are the do you know the numbers about like how much are you allowed to carry anything? Because I know in America there was like before a lot of the states were legal, there was certain rules about like, okay, if you have X amount on you, you know, whatever, like you can't drive high, but if you have a certain amount in a bottle or whatever, it was okay.
There are huge differences between the federal states of Germany. But in Bavaria, as far as I know, you could get away with maybe maximum 3 grams, but still would have to pay a huge fee or something.
Really? Okay.
I remember a good friend of mine, they used to control him on his scooter or motorbike when he was 17. And he had a jacket on. He had on the last time a few weeks ago. Or was it a friend's jacket or whatever. In any case, there was a little amount of weed in his jacket and he didn't know about it. But like...
Really?
Like 0.2 gram or something. And they found it, and he had to do 25 hours of social work for that or something.
So, sorry guys, we had to take a small break there. But you were saying that when people get busted with weed... they had to have how much on them? Like, or how much could they have on them?
It's depending on which federal state you're in. Like, it's a super big difference.
Okay.
So regarding Berlin versus Munich, for example. Or Hamburg and Munich. There are huge differences. Okay.
Is Bavaria, like, the most strict with all of that kind of stuff?
You gotta know, somehow, Bavaria is the most conservative federal state of whole Germany.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
And has been since over whole 100 years now. Now, maybe not 100 years, but since after the war.
Okay, I was going to ask, was it the most conservative, like pre-World War II or post-World War II?
It's a super funny story. A short part about Bavarian history. But Bavaria, it's called Freistaat, like free state, the free state of Bavaria. That's the official name. And it's been proclaimed by socialists, by a group of socialists who were, and they were like, okay, fuck this whole bullshit. We're doing our own state, and we're after monarchy, after Ludwig II, we're building up a democracy here. That's still that.
Oh my God. But they still call it that because it was.
Yeah. They still call it that. And the funny thing is, but since 1945, after World War II, it is reigned by CSU, Conservative Party. And last year or 2 years ago, there was a big event, a jubilee, like 150 years of Free State of Bavaria. And Markus Söder, the minister president, the head of political leader of no, political leader is the wrong term. Like the
is it like the mayor of the like, of Bavaria or something?
Yeah, like prime governor.
Prime
for
minister?
For an international audience, I would call it governor. The governor of Bavaria, he really made it to avoid the whole part about this state being founded by socialists. In his hour long speech about the great story of Bavaria, it's ridiculous, super funny.
Wait. He tells a story of Bavaria, like in some speech or something, and leaves out the part that it was founded by socialists. How can you do that?
I think that's a topic for a whole.
That's like telling. Oh my God, dude. That's like telling. Oh fuck, dude. That's like telling the story of the founding of America and leaving out slavery.
And I bet there are more than enough.
That's like skipping the biggest fucking part.
And I bet there are more than enough people doing it in America.
Oh, dude, totally. Or they're justifying it by saying like it was different times. It was important. They enjoyed it. They lived happy
fucking
lives.
Bullshit.
Don't worry about it.
It still affects Bavaria today because Bavaria has still an own constitution. Not all federate states of Germany have that. Bavaria has still an own constitution. And that's also the...
Really? It has its own rules?
That's also the reason why Bavaria had those stricter rules about going out regarding Corona before whole Germany had it. Because Markus Söder, the governor, could do it based on this constitution.
So is... So why, I mean, this is crazy, but what gives Bavaria the right to have its own rules like that?
History. That's also the reason what gives the right that anyone could get absolutely in a dangerous state of his study caused by alcohol at the age of 16. Right. But if they stab you with like 3 grams of dope of weed, you're totally fucked.
That's so dumb, man. You know, I was thinking about this earlier. I wanted to ask you when we were talking about drinking from 16 on in Germany. But you know, I have this theory sometimes that in America, because I saw it so much when I was a teenager. You know, the stricter that a place is, or the heavier the restrictions are on certain things. Might in like have an adverse effect in terms of what they actually want, you know, because if they say, you know, if you're caught with any weed at all, you're busted, you can't drink till you're 21, you can't buy cigarettes till you're 18, whatever. And then you see this in the smaller towns where there's less things to do, you see this influx of people, you know, getting older brothers or siblings or friends, whatever, or stealing from their parents to get alcohol and to get cigarettes, and then like even leading further into alcoholism. Would you say, like, do you know what the numbers of alcoholism are like in Germany because of the way that they're able to put beer into their culture and how they accept it so early in their lives?
I can't tell you any numbers without without...
You're too drunk to even...
without research. I'm drinking beer, by the way.
It's funny that we're talking about this and we're both having beer.
No, but that's something I realized when I was growing up and getting to an age where I was reflecting more on myself and on the people around me, and started to realize that alcoholism is a huge thing. Because many people, you're told as a kid that they are sick or they got some problems, and you turn, I don't know, you turn 14 or you turn 16 or whatever, and you somehow get, it may be your uncle, it may be your fictional, your dad's best friend or whatever, and you get to point and realize, okay, this dude has just a huge problem with alcoholism. So it is a big thing.
Yeah.
And you start to realize that, but I cannot name you any numbers by now.
It's crazy. No, I don't know the numbers in America either, but I know that the numbers are way high. Way, way, way high with alcoholism and with drug abuse. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But I wondered sometimes, and maybe there's, I mean, I'm sure there's been like 1,000 studies done on this, but I've wondered so often if the alcoholism in America can, in certain locations, be correlated to the stigma that people put on drinking alcohol at an earlier age. I'm sure I'm not the first person to have ever thought about that, and I'm sure there's been studies on that too. But I mean, there's also so many other reasons for alcoholism in the States. I mean, there's also like the terrible living situations and the accessibility of it and the addictiveness of it and blah, 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 everything. But sometimes I wonder, like, are there as many, if you were to say, like, you know, out of 10 Americans and 10 Germans, are there an equal or similar amount of alcohol addicts? I don't know. Maybe, probably not, but I don't know. I just thought about that. Because every German I know, especially in Bavaria, drinks a lot of beer. Some of them have two or three with every dinner or something, or they do it, they drink like crazy after they do their mountain hikes and stuff. It's just so ingrained in the culture. It's for every celebration, it's for every dinner, it's for every birthday, there's even a term, guys, there's even a term in German for the beer that you enjoy after you finished your shift. It's called the Feierabend beer. You know, like free afternoon beer, your free evening beer, whatever. And
free time beer.
Yeah, your free time beer. You know, like, hey, you're done, have a beer. You know, and for me, it's so crazy to think like that's so ingrained in the culture that there's even words for when you have a beer. And I wonder about the people who, I don't know, who maybe can't handle it the right way, the same way.
You must say that there have changed many things, and when compared to what my dad told me, what his dad or just the generation of his dad or his own generation, what their relationship to alcohol or their use of it and how established it is in your family or whatever, there are already in my reality, there are already big changes happening. I just Googled, by the way, and found numbers that there are round about 1.7 million people in Germany addicted to alcohol.
1.7 million. Okay, what's the population of Germany? Like 80 million?
82 or 83, I guess.
Okay. Around 1 million from 80 million.
It says here, men and women between 18 and 64 years of age.
Of the alcohol, of the addicts.
Yeah.
Well, so like the moment you can drink until until you're so, you drink so long you can't.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but beer or alcohol in general has a whole nother habit about it. There was a, you know, there's a, the German government got an own representative for drug prevention and drug prevention basically, and she's a super conservative, or the one that I talk about was a super, she's not anymore, I guess, she's not drug representative, drug prevention representative, that sounds super weird in English, anymore.
Drug prevention representative, that's a very, it's a very American title.
But she was asked by journalists, What do you say about that in Bavaria, every year they have a drug festival where there are millions of people visiting and getting their body in very dangerous situations? And she was like, no, what's that? And he was like, Oktoberfest.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. People get hammered at Oktoberfest. They get fucking absolutely plastered. Yeah. Oh, fuck. Yeah, she's totally right. I mean, Oktoberfest is this open invitation to be an absolute idiot and get hammered and to vomit in the streets and to like hit somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Shit, man, that's crazy. I wonder also, like, in the amount of people who are alcoholics, I can't, that's the word, fuck, man. That sounded so dumb earlier. I was like, alcoholics. I wonder if there's, like, in the number of people who are alcoholics in Germany, how many of them are, like, self-aware? I guess that would be the million that have registered or, like, you know, come into their own, you know, self-help. But there must be a huge number outside of that are, like, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm German, you know?
Of course. There are so many of them, and you, in your everyday life, you hear those stories. I don't know, it's just maybe within work, and you talk about let it be a fictive company, but I've heard this so many times in many different situations. You might be working in a company, and you're talking about a colleague who behaves weird, and yeah, you don't know what's wrong with him. And then at some point, someone tells you, yeah, either him or his wife has serious issues with alcohol. Yeah, but that's the way it is.
But that's the way it is. Like, yeah, it's crazy how that's just so shrugged away. But honestly, it's funny sometimes that when we focus in on a topic, and today, like in this moment for this case, it's alcoholism. It's funny how there aren't that many differences culturally. You know, like as much as there are, I mean, the only difference would be the amount of people, because the population in America is so much bigger than the population in Germany. But that just means the numbers are different. But in terms of people who admit that they are, you know, the ratio could be similar. And the ratio of people who are denying that or accepting that as a normal way of life is probably also just as high. Like, you know, if you compare the numbers that way, it's really crazy.
But, yeah, that's anyways yeah, something I guess many people are realizing right now during this corona crisis, how similar situations all over the world are, because we're living in a globalized world. That's also that's also why this whole thing spread that fast. And
right,
I experience it when I'm talking to people from different cultures, maybe you being from the States or someone from Asia or whatever, that I'm talking about people of our generation, that
right,
the only big difference I could point out would be history and traditions that affect you. But in so
what
many,
do you mean by that?
I mean, I guess if you break it down, we're talking already, I think, about an hour now. But if you break it down and comparing
what
experience...
What else you got going on?
comparing experience with alcohol, drugs, vacation, whatever. We'll find... Whatever topic we're talking about, we're finding so many similarities.
And, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And the biggest differences that turn out to be ones are the laws, the traditions, the history, whatever, the infrastructure around the topic or the story.
Right, right.
But in a way of life, so many situations and so many people experience basically the same.
You know, that actually reminds me, one of my favorite
in the
songs.
Western world, I gotta say.
Yeah. That's actually a really important distinction, I think. But that reminds me of one of my favorite songs from my extremely influential teen years was this song from Death Cab for Cutie on their album Plans, which was like the biggest, most important record in the world to me for a long time. But the song different names for the same thing. You know, it's like the whole, I think the whole story of the first verse is like him traveling in a different country, and he pulls like he pulls an outdated map from his pocket, and everything is just different names for the same thing. Like, oh, here's, you know, cafe, bar, restaurant, blah, blah, blah. It's all just different names for the same thing. People are always just the same wherever he goes. And fuck, I love that song, man. It's so beautiful. And it just reminded me of that.
Fuck, I've listened to Death Cab for Cutie last week to a few songs. What's the one that's pretty famous? I
Will Follow You Into the Dark. Yeah, it's from the same record. It's like track five on the same album.
Great.
It's crazy, man. That record was the shit for me for so long.
That's something I must admit I love about the whole situation right now. I get into music I already know and already have downloaded on my phone since years and whatever, but never got to listen to, because in your everyday life, or in my everyday life in Munich, you listen to music or podcasts and it's always the same routine, getting in the subway, putting that one playlist, that one album on. For me, the last few months, it used to be mainly hip hop and stuff. And right. Listen to that, then get out. And that's your whole experience of listening to music. And you know what album I got back into right now in this situation?
What's that?
Electric Ladyland by Hendrix Experience.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And I don't know why, but...
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that in a long time, man.
And it's super crazy. And I've had this one moment. I was sitting on my balcony. It was already dark, moon shining bright. You know, the whole beautiful Oberstdorf mountain scenery around you.
And oh yeah, it's gorgeous.
I got my earphones on and listening to the song, what's its name? 1983 mm-hmm. of this record. It has like, it's like 13 minutes long, and it has a long part in the middle where there's the super experimental sound. You gotta get into that. But I was sitting there and smoking a little joint.
It's the rules.
And that song came on, and dude, I tell you, the middle part, you gotta be in the right mood to listen to it. But the first 4 minutes are so catchy, and you get so into it. And that's something I really like about it, because I fall back to music that I loved at some point, but never had the time to appreciate, or it was too. It challenged me too much to listen to. In your everyday routine in the U-Bahn, you don't listen to songs with crazy 2 minutes guitar solos or weird right. sound clusters or anything. You don't do it. But now
Go ahead. Sorry.
Now you have the time to actively listen. That sounds pretty cliche, like I'm an old dude trying to sell vinyls. But it's a thing for me, getting to music that challenges me to listen it. But I also feel even happier when because I kind of appreciate it. And it's like, okay, it's not annoying me that they are building some kind of weird sound by throwing the whole drum kit around in a staircase of the 18th century or whatever those crazy motherfuckers did back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate it.
Dude, yeah. Actually, you have it's a really good point that you brought that up. I was just having a conversation a couple of days ago about a really similar thing. It's like, I don't know. I used to think that when a band I loved would bring out a new album, that I would fucking, I don't know. I used to pre-order CDs and vinyls and have them shipped to my house so I could lay on the floor with this record player and listen to them. And like, I used to obsess with records, man, like beyond imagination, get so heavily into every single note and just go crazy. And I think the last record that I really, really fucking dove into and have listened to every single note hundreds and hundreds of times was probably not the most recent, but the album before, from Tame Impala, Currents, from 2015.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think it's 2015.
I was at your birthday party when you got it as a present.
Exactly. Yeah. That party. Yeah. So that was, you know, the album had come out that year, and that the vinyl was a gift. And that was fucking, you know, they just came out with a record this year, and that was 5 years ago, man. And in the current digital age, that's a lifetime. And I mean, Jesus Christ, dude, that was the last record that I really, really, really obsessed with. And I was just thinking the other day how, you know, a few artists that I really love have released new content, like, I don't know, Tame Impala, for example, released a new record, and Andy Schauf released a new record. And I think the last one I kind of really obsessed with was Anderson .Paak's record, Oxnard. But it's still, like, nothing still has held me, like, grabbed me and, like, made me obsess the same way that Currents did 5 years ago. And I'm wondering if that's a product of our generation, like a product of the modern age, creating so much content all the time that your attention span and your interest can't latch onto it enough. Like, yes, I listened to the new Tame Impala and the new Andy Schauf a few times each, but it just didn't, like, I didn't obsess and mull it over and, like, dissect it. And there's still time for that, of course, but it just wasn't the same feeling that I had for that. And I wonder if it's just because everything is so fast and so quick and so instant pleasure these days. And just to connect to your point, I think this is kind of the perfect time to appreciate bands releasing new records right now and actually try and tap into the old way a little bit. Like, I know that Childish Gambino just released a new record, and I'll think of it later, but another band that I really like just released a new record that I really like. But Little Dragon, Little Dragon and Childish Gambino just released new records. And I don't know, it's funny to me, like, because of, again, it's like this dark side of my the happy side of this dark time is that you have the time to appreciate these new things, you know. And maybe it's now's the time to obsess over these records and find the beauty in them and find, like, the work in them and stuff. And, like, something that scares me about, like, as an artist is, like, you know, we have this new record that's being pushed to you know, later this year or even early next year or something. And, like, will there be listeners like me who hear it a few times and, you know, dig it, but wonder what the next, like, what the next content is, you know? Such a weird world where you don't obsess. Like, I used to wait in line at stores to buy the physical CDs and to get the vinyls, and, like, I would go to the bands and get them signed and, like, obsess, man. Like, I used to obsess. But since 5 years, I haven't done that as much. And I think that is something to do with the generation.
Yeah, of course. And also the possibilities. I mean, we've talked about the stuff we do in home recording. The little thing I did, it was like with working on that those little riffs and stuff, it was like 3 hours of time for me putting in to get something out of my computer that's actually sounding, not regarding my playing, but just regarding the sound quality, sounding actually in a way that you could also say to someone who's not a professional, okay, you could release this. And that's the thing. Right. I mean, Billie Eilish's brother, I have lots of love for Billie Eilish hate, but anyway, Billie Eilish's brother who produced a whole album.
What's his name again? His DJ name?
Phineas.
Phineas, right.
One producer of the year at the Grammys for producing an album on freeware in her bedroom at her parents' house.
Unbelievable, man. Such a weird difference. And it's such a weird time.
And I don't want to be like, yeah, everything has been better in those good old times. It's not like that.
No, not at all.
But then I think about appreciation for the stuff you do. I mean, basically anyone is capable of building a basic hip hop riff, a basic hip hop beat these days, somehow, that you could use in any way. And that's also why exactly this genre is releasing that much content, like hip hop singles even in smaller markets like German hip hop scene, you have every Fridays you have like 2 albums and 18 singles and whatever.
It's crazy, dude. The mixtapes. There's so many mixtapes.
And I think we're at a point where I don't know, we lose appreciation for the real for work that flows into working on an album. I mean, there's a great band from Munich, Samt. I think we talked about them. I know their singer, and they're releasing a double LP within the next month, and crowdfunded to release it on vinyl. And I'm not the biggest fan of their sound. It's like a pretty vibey pop, pretty, but in a I don't know, like 80s guitars and some indie synthy parts on it and basic drums, in a way of appreciating what pop music has brought to us within the last 40 years. But it's not exactly my sound, but I still like to listen to the music and appreciate it because I know, okay, obviously because I know one of the guys in the band.
Yeah.
But I see the work that flows in there and the love that they put into this project and that they and all the effort they take to make this happen. And I guess we lose that for many artists where we don't see that.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, like, you know, just brought up this Tame Impala record, but I mean, it took him, dude, 5 years to release a new record. And he had millions of fans just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And then finally, you know, like, me being a humongous Tame Impala fan, there I am, like, sitting at the cusp of the new release. And actually, I listened to it all the way through. And my first listen, I was like, eh, it just wasn't what I wanted it to be. And then I gave it 2, 3, 4, 5 tries, whatever, because I was like, no, it can't just disappear from me. Tame Impala can't just be a band I don't care about anymore. And I just kept listening and kept listening. And of course, now I found like 4 or 5 tracks that I love, but it isn't the same as when I would like really go fucking crazy. I mean, even like, well, maybe it's a bit different with Mac DeMarco, but you know, I'm such a Mac DeMarco fan. And this last record, Here Comes the Cowboy, I mean, every critic in general has pretty much said that like it's not his best work and he sounds kind of tired. It's a very, oh Jesus, it's a very slow record. It's very dry. It's very, it does sound like he's kind of just tired. Like he needs to just sleep for a few days and like get his juice back. But still, I don't know. I think 5 years ago I would have given it more attention than I did this time around. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's weird because I'm actively searching for new music that catches me in that way, and I'm having serious issues to find it. And then I get back into stuff like Hendrix or the second album I'm really into right now. I don't know why. I've listened to this when I was 17 years old for a summer and then never again. And now I'm back into it. Music from the Big Pink, the band.
Oh, shit, man. Now that's what is up, dude. I love that record. Oh, my God. Oh, man. Music from Big Pink is so good.
And I can't explain you why, but it's just like at the moment, I'm listening to The Weight at least once a day. And I can't tell you why, but it's catching me.
Oh, man. Man, you know, the first two records before Richard Manuel's voice starts to really deteriorate from all the whiskey, it's just glorious music making, dude. It's just such a masterpiece. Did you ever read Levon Helm's autobiography, This Wheel's on Fire? Dude, okay. Honestly, as my friend and as another musician, I cannot recommend a book more, really. There's two autobiographies I would recommend for anyone who's really into these bands and into music this way. But this Wheels on Fire from Lee Von Helm is a genius, beautifully written historical rendition of the whole story of the band and everything. And it's written very simply. It's written very, it's very easy to digest and to just absorb yourself into the story. And then the other one would be, Let's Go So That We Can Get Back. Let's Go So We Can Get Back. The Jeff Tweedy autobiography. Dude, this book, Jesus, man. If you're a Wilco fan, this book is so good. I've read it already once before and I'm reading it again. It's just so good. But yeah, dude, like getting into these old records and stuff, it's such a perfect time to do that and to try and appreciate your friends more and, you know, connect.
Yeah. And that's something positive because the whole situation is bothering me in a way that I'm thinking like, okay, this is so fucked up. We're having a crisis that will be remembered in history. And I thought about it, and I think, or as far as I know, there was never a crisis where, and I don't want to underestimate the effect it has and the people who are dying every day in all over the world.
Of course.
But I think there was never a crisis where that many people or that huge part of world population would just be chilling out at home and waiting for it to end. Yeah. Obviously that's another first world problem, I know, but I think there was
You're not saying it like it's like a problem. You're just saying like you're surprised that you couldn't have imagined a pandemic where everyone's punishment is like stay home.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy. It is weird.
And I mean, I'm a privileged guy, and I think you too. We're having a good life just chilling out in a beautiful village. And that's at some point very paradox. And on the other side, I find myself thinking about it. Okay, am I a bad guy because I enjoy stuff like finding a love for actively listening to music that is produced in a certain way or whatever, or reading this book or watching this series? Because actually, it is that way. I'm really enjoying some parts of it. Obviously, we all are at some point annoyed of sitting at home after a certain time. But then you remember, okay, it could be worse. And on the other hand, in my case, I am enjoying many parts of it because I have the time for many things I would never do in my everyday life.
It could be way worse. Honestly, I just downloaded the first two seasons of the show Atlanta, and I had already seen those two seasons before. Have you seen it before?
Nope.
Yeah, Atlanta is like this amazing show written and created by Donald Glover, Childish Gambino, and it's a super realistic portrayal of Atlanta and the hip hop scene, and it's like fucking genius, and it's super funny. It's really tasteful. It's really artistic, and last night we were watching like episode 3 or 4 or whatever of the first season. And I had already seen it before, but we were watching it again. And I was just thinking, man, how lucky is it that, you know, what I'm supposed to do is stay inside and watch one of the best TV shows ever made, you know?
Yeah, of course.
It's crazy.
Of course. Those are crazy times in any way.
Really crazy times, yeah. But yeah, man. We would have been in France right now, but I'm honestly not sad. I'm sad that my brother couldn't visit Europe because he's only been one time.
Yeah, imagine that.
And he had to cancel all the money and everything was already booked. But
did he get any refund or something?
Thankfully, the flight was refunded pretty early because even the flight was canceled itself from the airline. But there was a battle with the Airbnb. Like, the guy only at first wanted to give them 50% back, which is kind of bullshit because, I mean, who can travel right now anyway? But then finally they discussed more and they made kind of a deal, and finally it worked out. It was fine. But Yeah. But I mean, honestly, there could be way worse places to be. Like, you know, we were, we have to go back to the city next week because this school that I'm at has some days where we're taking care of a few kids.
Yeah.
Who have nowhere else to go and stuff. But, you know, right now it's, you know, it's a beautiful village and the sun is shining and, you know, we get to do this podcast. So that's pretty cool.
Dude, I still don't know how come that you travel to Oberstdorf at some point during the pandemic.
That was kind of a plan that we had in mind. You know, we were in Munich and I was still doing some occasional shifts at the school, like this daycare thing. And a plan was that if they put this Ausgangssperre, like this like city lockdown in place,
yeah,
that we would come here because we would be able to isolate ourselves responsibly in this apartment that we're in. But we would still have this open space around us. You know, there's still like, we could still go on like long walks and like see the hillside and see the mountains and like enjoy outside responsibly, just the two of us, and not have to worry about like being in a city and like, you know, running into a group of people that we know and risk spreading anything around and still enjoy it without like, you know, being trapped in an apartment going crazy together.
Cool, because I was wondering, because you just sent me a message, okay, I'm in Oberstdorf 9. I was like, hey, how dare you? No, but funny situation, because still for me it's super weird because it happened just by chance, if you want so. Because I've been here anyway for a few days.
Oh really?
I've been here anyway for a few days for a skiing trip with some colleagues, and then I had a phone call with my boss. It was March 14th, 15th, I guess, and he was like, "Yeah, better stay there with your parents, and don't come back to Munich."
Ah, funny. See, I always thought initially that you had the same mindset, that you were like, "Okay, something's happening in Munich. I'm gonna go stay with my parents."
I have the same mindset, and I am happy and privileged that I'm here. But it happened by chance, and I still don't know when I can or should go back to Munich.
You don't know when you're going to go back?
No, because there are it's still quite unsure. I'm full-time employee at N94.5 since February, so I kind of have to see what happens there and when they want to have me back. Because as long as we're working from home office, I see no reason to go back to Munich. Because I can do everything from here, and it's a way easier situation than in the city. Like you just pointed out. I still don't know. Might be in 1.5 weeks, might be in a month. I'm not sure.
But I've made projections. Do you think it'll get worse before it gets better, or do you think we've already seen the worst in Germany at least? I know that Austria next week is loosening up.
Yeah, but they've been very strict for about a month now. I don't know.
Yeah, they're ahead of us a bit, right? Like 3 weeks ahead of us.
I think I'm not informed enough and in a situation to give a prediction for that. I hope to be back in Munich for summer because I love Munich in summer.
Dude, I really hope that we can enjoy a little bit of Munich summertime because I mean the Isar and
the whole beer garden thing and stuff.
The beer garden, man, fuck, it's so nice.
And I hope I can be back in Munich for that, but I'm totally unsure. So let's see what happens. I made one undercover ride to Munich with Tony, my girlfriend, after 1 week. We've been here because we only had stuff here for like clothes and stuff, and she didn't have a laptop here because we were on the skiing trip. And then
And then she couldn't even do her job. Yeah,
and then one Tuesday we were getting in the car, riding to Munich, getting in Tony's flat, grabbing her stuff, getting to my flat, grabbing my stuff, and all the way back.
Were you guys super freaked out that the Munich police would stop you?
What did you say?
Were you guys freaked out that the Munich police might stop you?
No, totally not.
It's so opposite from Efi. She always has these she has to make up like these situations in her head. Like she'll stop the conversation and she'll say like, okay, the story is if we have a car full of stuff and we're driving from Munich to Oberstdorf. So let's say that that I'm working there and you're staying there too, but we had to come back for this and we have a plan and we have to be there for this long and because of my job and blah, blah, blah. Like she gets so paranoid, so worried that she's going to get busted by the cops for something, you know? It's so funny.
Yeah, but I got to say our little trip to grab some stuff was before the restrictions and the lockdown.
Okay, so would you have been paranoid if it was after the lockdown?
No, I don't think so. Because the whole story still would be, okay, we're staring in quarantine with my parents and we're driving to Munich straight to the flat, grabbing some stuff, getting back into car, seeing no other people, getting back to Oberstdorf.
Right, okay. Right. Yeah. Probably wouldn't have been that bad.
I don't know.
I saw them breaking up some people in the... like on the Isar, like a few groups of people, you know, splitting them up. But then like the last weekend before we left, like that Sunday before we left, it was a beautiful, hot, sunny, clear sky in Munich. And there was just so many fucking people out everywhere. Like I even took a video on my phone because the runners and the bikers and the joggers and the sunbathers, everyone was out. And I just thought like, what are you doing? Like, what are these people doing? It was so crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's...
And the cops weren't anywhere. They didn't break it up or anything. They weren't, like, strict or crazy or hanging around.
Yeah, but still, I was getting to the center of Oberstdorf today just to buy some different things, riding to a shop. And I had a little mask in my bag in case if the shop would be crowded and stuff. Nobody was there, but I was riding past two construction places, and everyone who seemed to be working there was standing in a group and having kind of a meeting about what to do, what you usually see on a construction site. But they were like standing in one group, shoulder by shoulder, and was like, "You dumb motherfuckers! Didn't anybody tell you? You don't just give a shit."
That's so crazy, man. Such a weird world.
Yeah. It's a weird, nice, weird man. World.
Well, I think on that note, we should just remind the listeners that at the end of this, we're going to play 20 seconds of your home demo and 20 seconds of my home demo, and we're going to make a post about it on Instagram, at Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, and you can be the judge of who has made the sicker, slicker demo. You can be the roast master, the judge, the critic, whatever you want to be. Tell us who had the better song, and we can make another one.
Imagine being a diehard Jordan fan of Jordan Prince's music, and then listen through 1 hour and 40 minutes of conversation where I think at some point both of us already forgot that this is a podcast recording, to then get 20 second sound bites.
They're gonna be like, I'm not gonna listen to that shit. That's like the commercials at the end of a podcast. Like, don't forget to use Quip, quip.com/artsy.
we should start a really, really bad clickbait campaign about this. Hey, new Jordan Prince material.
Oh my god. But I think I will lose this race though, because yours actually has like a full production sound and mine's just acoustic, but we'll see how they play.
We'll
it
see.
Out.
By the way, I still would be down if we do something together. If you record something,
yeah,
and I add the stuff, I can add to it.
You know, we can do this these demos for people to judge. And then whoever wins, the loser has to add on to that track.
Nice.
This world is changing, baby, out for the worst, it seems.
So if mine wins, then you play bass and do harmony on my track. And if yours wins, which I think it might because it's really cool, then I would add vocals to your track.
That sounds like a fair deal.
I think that's pretty cool. And although we started on vacations, I'm glad that my strange vacation is here in this apartment talking to you, my friend. It's been a nice chat.
Yeah, same for me. It's the weirdest vacation ever, staying here for so long, unplanned. But it's some way it's a cool vacation, and it's been a huge pleasure talking to you for that long, even if we lost topic like 8 times. But that's a great thing about it, because...
That's podcasting, baby.
Yeah, and I love when two of us have a conversation and it we end up in a total different plot, but still know what to talk about. That's a good
it's nice
sign,
to catch
bro.
Up in general. Absolutely, absolutely. And for everyone still listening after this long, I would just like to say. Thank you so much for being with us for this. And please make sure to go to wherever you subscribe to your podcast, if that's on Apple Podcasts or Podigy or Spotify or wherever. Give us a good review. And, you know, the most important thing is telling a friend. You know, that goes a long way for small podcasts like us. So,
by the way,
tell your buddy.
Our statistics can tell us when people drop out of the episode. And we could make a deal. Whoever may still be listening to this will get a Jordan Prince record or something.
Dude, I guarantee it is a man by the name of Moritz Bender. Hello, Moritz. You're a great person and I love you. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And Mo, it's been a pleasure. And all right, guys. Have a great weekend and much love from us.
Tito. Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao.
Saints are coming through, and it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.